Jaspreet Boparai and Don Nicholson with Greenwashed on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
Welcome back here with Greenwashed. And as promised, it's time for the climate crazy. And maybe you start from the UK, Don.
Yeah, why not? Look, that different country, similar sort of emphasis on all these renewables and the amount of money and greed that's involved.
It's universal.
Yeah, let's expose a bit of it. Why not?
So this article that's been on various mainstream media as well, but I picked up the particular link from the Daily Skeptic. Tesco and Shell to buy up output of controversial Kent solar farm intended to power 100,000 homes. So this particular project in the UK was opposed both by the people, the local population, and the council. It was fast-tracked in. No opposition was allowed. Everyone's all in for renewables. And now, when it is very near completion, it's supposed to be in commission early 2025. The people are told that instead of the 100,000 homes it was going to power, the output of this power plant has been taken over by two companies. Now, the two are Tesco, which is going to take 65% of the output of this farm, and the remaining 35% is going to be taken up by Shell, which is buying up sources of renewable energy to power its growing network of EV charging stations. But the people obviously are not happy because the project was approved on the premise it would power homes, not petrol stations and supermarkets. I'm funny how that happens time and time again.
Well, it is funny. I mean, it is odd that they these two companies think they can commandeer the electrons from a specific site. I mean, I'm not sure how that works in reality. They can buy chunks of electricity out of the market, but it is wrong to think that the public were, as you've highlighted, expecting it to power their domestic needs, not the needs of big companies. But as I said, electrons go into a big mass, a big pool. I don't know how you separate out electrons the way this indicates in the story that you can. You can't. So, but it is wrong that I'm sorry if I'm not making much sense, that anyone should think they can commandeer any power plant unless it's only going to supply and there's nothing going into the grid from it elsewhere to other places. And that's clearly not the case here, because they talk about 144 supermarkets around, so they clearly aren't all in the zone. Now, they all have different electricity networks getting the power to them. So they've bought a chunk of power and they're saying that's ours. Well, they're probably going to get it from anywhere. So it makes no sense to me, this headline.
It is a perfect example of climate communism, where you socialize the costs, but you privatize the benefits. And no one listens to, who has paid for all this infrastructure?
Well, that's the key. It's generally the taxpayers that will have been in the UK cross-subsidizing this whole thing. And then all of a sudden, at the last 12th hour, they get it taken off them. It looks like that on paper, at least.
And I think relevant to this point is that emailed the Substack article by one of our former guests, Thomas Shepstone, who had put this up. And it says, the Substack says, how climate change is being used as an excuse to fleece the ratepayers and taxpayers, two Brits explain. So Russell Quirk of Net Zero Watch in the UK, he's done this interview, of which I'm hopefully going to play a short clip now, with Andrew Montford, who is explaining exactly what's happening in the UK with this climate money. Where the greenwashing is certainly greenwashing. The amount of money we are talking of here is huge. It is coming from the public's pocket.
Yeah, and so Andrew Montford's from Net Zero Watch, and I think this guy, Russell Quirk, is running his own show called Talk. But no matter. This is a very it's salutary, this clip, because it can apply just about anywhere.
Oh, absolutely, and that's why if you think why we're talking about the UK, because this is how the game has unfolding world over. Have a listen, please.
In a bit more detail now with my next guest, Andrew Montford, who is deputy director of Net Zero Watch. You probably don't disagree with any of that, Andrew, do you?
Absolutely not. No. Good. The climate quote unquote emergency is just used constantly as an excuse for extracting money from people. Politicians love it because they can virtue signal and say, look, I'm doing this to save the planet. In reality, what they're trying to do is to fleece the public for more money. I mean, you can think of other examples of this, like ULEZ zones in the UK. You know, it's really just a fundraising measure. The whole green climate movement now is it's so corrupt. It's a way of just fleecing the public. Your pensions being fleeced, your incomes being looted. It's endless. And until the public start punishing politicians who support these kind of measures, it's going to continue.
The trouble is, Andrew, a lot of the public are drinking the Kool-Aid, aren't they? Because the mainstream media, the majority of them seem to be towing this same climate crisis line, you know, starting with the old adage that, you know, soon you'd have polar bears walking down Aylesbury High Street. The Maldives would disappear forever. I mean, all of this absolute abject nonsense, which wasn't true, still isn't true. The public, of course, have been indoctrinated by this cult. And it is a cult, isn't it? You know, and a cult, I might add, this might get me into trouble with this, but this cult that then also fuels, no pun intended, a lot of profit for the likes of Dale Vince. So Dale Vince, that is the kind of the scarf-wearing, cool haircutted eco-warrior that bangs on and on and on about getting rid of oil and gas and coal. And guess what? He owns a sustainable energy company that makes tens, and I mean tens of millions of pounds worth of profit every year. This is not just a cult, it's a racket.
Yeah, it's a cult, very definitely. I mean, you can see that everywhere. It operates like every other cult. You know, opposition is silenced and demonized. Children are indoctrinated, the public are indoctrinated, and yeah, so that's very much a cult. There are people that who are therefore also making money out of it. I mean, whether Dale Vince is a true believer or not, I don't know. But certainly he's making a lot of money, and a lot of other people are making money out of it. There was a story just yesterday, you know, we had an SNP politician who's trying to change the planning rules about wind farms, and oh, lo and behold, he's taken a really great big donation from a wind farm company. Yeah. This kind of stuff goes on all the time. I've been posting numbers recently from wind farms. They're making huge sums of money from subsidy.
But they are, but Andrew,
they're almost making nothing from selling electricity. They're making money from subsidy.
And that is the crux of the issue. They are not making money doing what is supposedly their core business. They are making money from subsidies.
Hey, quite right. And of course, our view is that we need low-cost, abundant energy sources for our country to thrive. And that's the opposite of where we're heading. We're having high cost, intermittent options put in front of us. And yeah, New Zealand is different with its massive amount of, as we call them, renewables, hydro and perhaps geothermal. But you know, in the end, we're gonna fall into the same sort of boiling pot of higher energy costs if we keep playing into this climate net zero stuff. So corporate greed, it's everywhere. I mean, it's happening in farming right now, as you and I know, about the people that are saying they've got some new technologies to reduce methane, that nasty, nasty gas called methane that animals burp. Well, you know, we thought that the government's putting its money in was bad enough, and farmers putting their money in was bad enough, but now it's being privatized by the greedies. And whatever that is, none of them want to take the open market test, do they? They all want to hide behind legislation to peddle their wares. And it's wearisome. It's wearisome. And you will hope that it's going to end sometime soon. But 30 years of this hasn't shown any sign of losing its impetus.
Mm-hmm. And so we should, as a public, general public, we should take a fair share of blame for being lazy enough to let this just slide by for so long.
It sounds so nice. It sounds so just. It sounds so vital to have this. You get the sales pitch, Jaspreet, it's been massive. And we love sales pitch. You know, every day you're getting put something in front of you at the supermarket. You, uh, You've got the specials. We love the sales pitch. We love the sales. And so this is no different. This is just a fashionable sale, but there's a whole lot of corporate greedies sucking at it. And it's horrible.
And still staying at the same story from the UK, going into further details of this, UK today has high power prices, and we've all been told wherever we live in the world that renewables are going to cut/ our power bills. This year alone in the UK, the OBR, which is their Office for Budget Responsibility, is estimating that the subsidies for renewables will add £12 billion to UK's electricity bills. The UK National Grid is already planning to spend over $100 billion in the next 10 years to build hundreds of miles of transmission lines covering the countryside and pylons to bring wind power from Scotland and the North Sea to the towns and cities that will use it. Mm. I can't think of a more expensive, obscene way to get electricity than to generate it way, way out from where you need it. And then no one is even talking about the fact that the installed capacity and the actual output from renewables is sometimes a fraction of what you thought you had.
Well, you know, most things, when it becomes abundant, if it was abundant, and it should be abundant, would go down in price.
Price,
you
know, yeah.
Ubiquitous, all and everywhere, but not in electricity. Everything's about up, up, up. And you know what's worse than all of this is the discovery that the new electrons are in a large way, you know, in our country, going to fuel data centers and the demand for AI technology. And I'm not against all AI technology, by the way. I mean, there's seriously good stuff around that. But you know, we're not making it easy for ourselves. You know, if we want to have this low cost, abundant energy resource, and then we want to electrify the country, why are we doing the opposite? Why are we making it more expensive? Because that's what's happening. I mean, the price should be going down, Jaspreet. That's my view. And imagine if we had, if we did have more hydro, and we did have more geothermal, and you know, there is obviously some testing going on for more geothermal, and we actually thought about nuclear, we could have abundant energy, and we could electrify the country, and everyone would be happy because the price would be so low. But no, that's not what we're doing.
That's absolutely not what you're doing. What you're doing is actually increasing the penury, increasing hardship, and then telling people that, hey, this is how we can sort out our current climate crisis. Another article from the Daily Mail that never fails to deliver, published on the 1st of October, says, is this the key to tackling climate change? Almost 40% of the public would agree to World War II-style rationing of meat and fuel to slash carbon emissions, reveals a survey of 9,000 people.
Yeah.
So,
outrageous.
But, you know, there it is in your face. They go on to say, while the war may almost be 80 years in the past, 40% of the public would now welcome back the ration book to help fight climate change. These were the researchers from, the Uppsala University, Sweden, who surveyed participants in India, Brazil, Germany, and the US. This is what they want us to do. Absolutely take away the last shred of anything that's good in our current lives.
Yeah, and that's the antithesis in all of this. These people, I've talked about it before. If these people want to do this, go and find your own place on the planet and do it. But just leave the rest of us alone, because we're not actually the bad eggs in this whole thing. I mean, we actually know that the environment gives us everything we enjoy, and we want to use it responsibly. And we do. But clearly there's some improvements we could make. But, you know, things evolve. They don't just happen overnight. And if you've done something stupid and bad in the environment, it tells you pretty quickly.
It does tell you pretty quickly. Another thing that they say, this is the World Wildlife Fund, the WWF, that it says can help cut your climate crisis, is to follow the Indians. So this headline says, India's food habits are the best, and replicating the Indian diet can help the earth achieve climate goals. So the Indian diet has been supposedly deemed the most sustainable in the world. Now, and what does it say? In stark contrast to Argentina, Australia, United States, which are supposedly the highest meat eaters in the world. Now, someone tell me, since when did India become a place to emulate the diet for? Of course, there's religion plays a big part in this. The vast majority is Hinduism. And if you are a Hindu, most Hindus that I know do not eat meat. Why is the West supposed to do the same? Another thing no one talks about is the fact is that India is the diabetes capital of the world. The heart disease levels as well. That's why you have so many people going for medical tourism to India, because the doctors there have operated on so many. The treatments have been, you know, been there for such a long time. But the person's health is not being spoken about. Just emulate the country that is a vegetarian, thanks to its religious beliefs, and all will be good.
I didn't know those statistics, Jaspreet. I didn't know that India had those health issues, diabetes and heart issues.
Massive heart issues.
And all those sacred cows roaming the plains of India, no one's worried about them because you don't eat the meat. That's right.
You don't eat the meat.
So that's leaves them, gets them off the hook. So I'm being a bit glib, but...
So one of India's leading healthcare outfits is the Medanta, and this was last year. Is India the new heart disease capital of the world by their chief health officer? And in 2016, so the data is a bit outdated, it says more than 75% of the CVD, which is your cardiovascular pulmonary diseases in the Asian region, they happened around India. And I have seen this around me growing up. I have seen so many people around me who were vegetarian. Mm-hmm. The Sikhs, the community I belong to is a very small minority. Heart disease is very, very common in India. And you would think the impoverished India, where people are not eating, the junk food is not everyone can afford that. The dietary patterns are very different. The health would be great. But no, that is not the case.
Gosh. Well, we learn something every day. And of course, massive population. New Zealand, 5 million people. We are the beacon of hope for the whole world, aren't we? We want to be perfect in every way. And that's a nice aspiration. But we keep, I don't know, do we keep our own goals? We keep feeding the machine that doesn't do the stuff that needs done. Like giving us good infrastructure and good health and good police, all that stuff. That's fundamental. And we don't seem to be getting value out of our parliament or our local authorities for any of this stuff anymore.
No, what we get is cherry pick data. Then we have these NGOs like WWF thinking they are the most important, telling you pretty much what to eat. Meanwhile, the Honorary General Secretary CSIF India, he says that this lifestyle and the heart disease in India is happening because of a remarkable change in our lifestyle, lack of physical activity, and the fact that 86% of the Indian diet is carbohydrates. So kill yourself, save the planet, save yourself, kill the planet. I don't know. We just seem to go from one extreme to the other, don't we, Don?
Well, perhaps it's because we're more experienced, but I never seemed to think like this years ago. We never had to think. We always thought we never had to think that the world was in some sort of Armageddon was ahead. I mean, it's almost like they want us to be fearful of the future. Please don't be fearful of the future, unless. But you do need to be mindful of the people that you put in place with authority. That's the problem. We give far too much power to people that we elect. They abuse their power everywhere.
And we don't keep tabs on them. We do not.
No, we absolve. Another,
talking about keeping tabs, the Taxpayers Union is keeping tabs on a few. And the other day, one of their posts spoke about the fact, the headline was, high-flying bureaucrats blow 150K on the Bonn Climate Conference. Now, this was earlier in the year, in June. And the MPI, Ministry of Primary Industries, MFAT, Ministry for Foreign Affairs, and the Ministry for the Environment collectively spend this, three ministries, 10, they say, yep. So they sent 10 people there. And the irony of it is to save, to head to a conference to save the world, these 10 staffers logged on nearly 230,000 miles in combined air travel, including legs of this journey in the business class to talk about how others should reduce their emissions. Isn't it amazing? And they tell everyone else to Zoom and not do all of this, but 10 people, 10 individuals from little old New Zealand go to Bourn.
It's chump change to these people. I know that it's obscene, and I know business class seems unfair, but that's what these people do. I've never traveled business class in my life, no matter which forum I went to, but plenty of my colleagues did. And you know, it's just me. But it's intriguing, isn't it? They have all the other options these days to Zoom in, as you say, or do FaceTime or something, but you know, they choose to be in person. Now, I know that being in person and fronting is far, when you actually see the whites of people's eyes and you actually get to see the body language, it's far better than a Zoom call. The trouble is, you know, it seems excessive, this 10-person. It's not a junket. It's not a junket. Let's not call it that. They've been given the role. We have to give them some slack. They've been given the role by their heads of departments, or their, maybe it was the bosses. They've been given the role to go and do this, and they've cost us $150,000.
So this original OI was put in by the Taxpayers Union on the 19th of June. On the 18th of July, MPI extended a time limit to respond to their request to the 15th of August. And ultimately, towards the end of August, part of the information came through. So they say that, this is specifically talking about the MPI component, MPI attended the conference to advocate. That is such a, just advocate. That term can cover so many sins, can't it? To advocate for New Zealand's agricultural climate interests and support all parties to achieve consensus within the Sharma and El Sheikh joint work on food security negotiations. We sent one employee who attended the conference as a lead negotiator from 3rd to the 11th of June. The employee flew business class to enable them to travel, to attend negotiations and carry out their work, which is consistent with our policy for long-haul travel.
Yep. All stuff that we really needed them to do, admit it. Yeah, but I'm saying again, they've been given these roles and they've taken it as their job to do this stuff. And I'm not defending the spend at all. It's, yeah, we've got issues at home. This just seems another one of these sort of sinecures that people love to get involved in. I mean, there's not anyone in the hierarchy of the government or local government that wouldn't do the same thing. Not anyone.
And this is a media conference. So the Bourn Climate Conference, listeners, for those who don't know, it's an annual thing. It's a midway point for the year. Happens around June, July. And then all of that feeds into the end of the year COP, IPCC COP, which we mentioned earlier in the show, is happening in early November this year in Azerbaijan, Baku. So, you know, there's at least three junkets a year that the United Nations demands that we head over to. And we just continue.
And of course, we've got the Biodiversity Conference in Colombia. Now, there's 14,000 attendees going to that, apparently. How many will be going to the Baku conference? 29, I don't know. But I remember they had, was it 30,000 something at one of the recent ones? Was that the Paris one? Was 30? Or was that was there one more? No, it was more recent than that, 30,000 people. I mean, yeah, like we've said before, they're saving the world one conference at a time. And conferences don't come without cash, and a lot of it.
And a lot of it.
Yeah, I mean, you look at New Zealand, you know, they talk about the conference. And this sounds a bit obscene again, a bit awkward to talk about, but we have cities that want to be the conference city. They have agencies that are trying to get conferences to them. Now, Invercargill is no different. But really, what is the achievement in all of this? It brings a bit of economic development, they say.
But what is a net gain?
Yeah,
You spend feel, some, you earn
feel,
a bit.
Feel good is the net gain, perhaps.
Well-being.
I know, we're sounding like the Grinch. It's just horrible.
I am a Grinch.
But you know, when we've had rate demands going through the roof and we've had taxes, everything seems to be taxed. Yeah, comply to your die is your statement. We're going to be taxed till we die as well. And that's...
And beyond it.
And beyond. Oh, boy, we're having a bad day, aren't we?
Well, let's head to a good one then. And I shared this on my Facebook feed the other day and got quite a few comments despite me being really hammered. So this is an article, a press release by the Climate Club that was carried on Stuff and a few other headlines as well. It says 70 kindergarten teachers. 70 kindergarten teachers joined record-breaking educational event on climate change. So this happened this last week, Dawn.
This is a biggie, Jasfried. This is your big one. This is your
I was keeping this for the last, because otherwise I could have just gone on for half an hour, the time allotted to us for Climate Crazy, on just this one. But here we are. So Kaitiaki Kindergartens and the Climate Club Aotearoa joined forces to deliver New Zealand's biggest ever climate frisk. Climate frisk is a climate game, a card game, and you can even get the free deck for it online. But to deliver New Zealand's biggest ever climate frisk event to 70 kindergarten teachers at 10 frisk tables, empowering them to have climate change conversations in the community. It's a facilitated game that was developed in France explaining the causes and effects of climate change. It has so far been played by 1.8 million people globally and 1,200 people in New Zealand. So Emily Maven-Sutton, the general manager of the Climate Club Aotearoa, said that by offering this mass learning event to kindergarten teachers, we are helping to secure the future for our tamariki. Now, I could put this another way. By delivering this to kindergarten teachers, we are helping scare our young ones at a very early age, because I don't expect teachers to keep this sort of, I can't call it knowledge, this sort of
indoctrination.
Thanks, John. This sort of indoctrination to themselves, they will deliver it. So get them young. Catch them really, really young.
Vintage Marxism, isn't it? Vintage. Mm-hmm. Communism, vintage. I can't believe it. When you read into further of this concept, and you've done that and put it in front of me, it is amazing how deep the stuff goes into our society. Fresk, F-R-E-S-K is the name of this game. And the workshops, you just know it's another part of the puzzle. Yeah, and Al Gore, the Messiah, the top of the table. Is he? Do you think this is Al Gore's idea as well? He's given, he's seeded the idea?
I saw the Climate Frisk, this game mentioned on the WEF website as an important tool to be used.
Hmm.
The general manager of the kindergartens, Kaitiaki Kindergarten, Thara Solomon, is quoted saying, "Will we wait for the next generation to teach us the lessons of tomorrow, or will we take ownership to protect these children's future?" And early childhood, they say, is a great place, great settings to support children's rights to a viable future. And the Climate Frisk is a wonderful tool. So teachers brainstormed actions they could take using the climate superpowers as role models, consumers, investors, citizens, and so on. And they were encouraged to think about the main polluting sectors, which are agriculture, number one, of course, transport, building, and industry. Now, I just look at this and I go to the bottom of this page. It says the funding support for Climate Club to deliver these workshops was provided by the Auckland Council through the Auckland Climate Grant. And I have no doubt other councils will be doing something similar. But Dawn, unfortunately, last night had to sit through with me showing him the card deck online. 88 cards, each with wrong. There were few of them correct as well, but most of them had the IPCC science down there. Do you think, as they're saying, Dawn, in 90 minutes or 2 hours, 3 hours of workshop, these teachers have now become expert in the climate science? I have been reading this stuff for years now. And there are still things when I go back to you, I go back to our next guest will be coming up, Peter Foster and others, about the science that, hey, I don't understand this. The physics is not that easy to understand. But after a few years, I now feel relatively confident knowing that, you know, what I'm talking about and be able to explain it to someone. But these teachers seem to think that a 2 to 3 hour workshop is enough for them to become, what did they say? Climate supermodels.
Mm. Yep. I think a couple of points. I think the Auckland Council or the Auckland Mayor would be a bit surprised that he's adjudicating over an entity that's giving this sort of money out. And, you know, maybe there's other councils need to be aware of this as well. But just think about how that works. Within your council, you have different departments. You have someone will be managing the grants. Someone will be managing these sort of programs. How does it get from that level up to the top table? It doesn't. It doesn't get there because you put it through a CEO. He doesn't have to report this level. Just nope. Doesn't. So, yeah, but it's all coming at great cost to everybody. I mean, but the biggest thing in this is the indoctrination machine. I want our kids to be kids. And, yeah, so do many, so do most parents. But the indoctrination at such a young age of the people that are going to be working with our children just seems outlandish.
Yep. So the
I won't be playing the game. I won't be playing this game.
You sat through it with me last night. So thanks for that. The Auckland Council has a website on. It's called livelightly.nz. Livelightly.nz. And that page is all about climate ready, sustainable schools, the Auckland Council grant, one of which enabled this game here to be played, how to get your idea funded. And they even have a grants advisor, just like most councils have, that can tell you exactly which pot of money is the best one. You know, is it an arts grant, a creative grant, a climate grant?
Mm.
Or can they refer you on to MB or MFE, Ministry for Environment, to do this? But the children, I just want to see now, because I'll be watching this very carefully. So largest ever event of getting 70 teachers trained in a day. How is Kindergartens New Zealand further going to take this information? Is there going to be a whole lot more pamphlets, flyers, big display, wall charts in kindies? Are kids going to be put through more? Because the Enviro schools, I know. My daughter has been to one of those kindergartens, and that was well and good, you know, your composting and other things. But this now, a climate-aware school, a climate-aware kindergarten, no. Just a step too far for me.
Yeah, well, climate has become all embracing, hasn't it? They hide a lot of stuff under the climate, and that's the annoying thing. No issue with looking out for doing the right thing or doing what's best for you, not only yourself and your community and your surroundings, but you don't have to be virtuous to the end of time. I mean, on this stuff, it's galling to me to see people address this sort of stuff while they live a very comfortable life. The contradiction is not lost on me.
No.
And so, yeah, look, the other thing I do know, and I was told to me many years ago by a guy in Christchurch, a hard case guy, he said, we've got people in our council. Their sole job is to go and seek grants and see whether they can get massive, many funding streams for certain projects. I mean, if that's how the world has to live, it's sad, isn't it? Where you have to put your hand out and expect someone to put it in, put some money into it so you can do something. We do that. You and I do that in our past, you know, when I was farming. We do that through fair trade, free and fair trade.
Yep.
It just seems that these people want to use the legislative powers and the privileges they've been given to fulfill their life. I find it really sad that so many people do it. I just find it sad.
It's just a crazy world, all right. And that's why we call it the climate crazy. Mm. In fact, one last headline that actually caught my attention last week, but was not the climate crazy, Don. What swims? What can swim? 4,000 kilometers and then gets tested for the flu?
Not me.
A penguin. So a penguin that was found in Wellington, 4,000 kilometers, has somehow gotten there. It was among a few that was being tested by Doc and others there for the flu, for the avian flu. And just look at this. What a crazy world we live in right now. And most, I don't know how others reconcile it in their heads, all these sorts of headlines there. But this is where we are at. Humanity is probably at its lowest point right now. The last few years have been quite the watershed for me. So many things that I believed in, I trusted in, institutions I thought I could rely upon. It's all just fallen to bits around me.
Yeah, well, and you know, George Orwell's book, 1984, effectively talked of this stuff, and it's playing out. I mean, it's as blunt as that. I trusted everything around me too. I still try to trust stuff. Otherwise, your life becomes really miserable. Let's make sure we put the blowtorch on the people that are abusing the privilege that we have allowed them, sadly, to have. We need to put the blowtorch more and more on these sorts of failing institutions, like our universities, like our legal profession, like our many other professions. I mean, I'm very worried, Jaspreet, I know we're running short on time here, really worried about the legal climate action people. It's just a feeding frenzy waiting to happen for them, this climate nonsense. And I find that that's next level obscenity for me.
All of this has been driven by money. And whenever there's money involved, you'd find someone who's ready to step up and deliver. Yep. But there are still a few good men who stand their ground. And a couple of them are ones we'll be having on our show next after this break this morning. These two gentlemen are from the Methane Science Accord, and they have recently been in touch with the Methane Science Review Panel. And Don and I thought it's time for us to get them back on and have an update about where things are going on the methane science, you know, that the killer gas that's going to kill us all, and especially in New Zealand. So stay tuned for that coming up just after the break. And if you have something that's caught your attention and you think Don and I should cover it in the Climate Crazy, please feel free to send us an email and we'll do our best. Thank you for joining us this morning, 2057, and stay tuned after the break.
From caps to tees and bags to bumper stickers, we have you covered. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/shop.